You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Dr. Pry, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Dr. Pry, before we get into a discussion of electromagnetic pulse, EMP, for the benefit of the listeners, I just want to give them again a little background about who you are. You are, as I said, the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. You have served on the Commission on the Strategic Posture of the United States from 08 to 09. You were the Director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum 05 to 09, and of course that had to do with weapons of mass destruction. You were on the EMP Commission, which is formerly known as the Commission to Assess the Threat to the United States from Electromagnetic Pulse, EMP, and that was from 01 to 08. And you were part of the professional staff on the House Armed Services Committee in the U.S. Congress, and you also served as an intelligence officer with the Central Intelligence Agency for 10 years. You've won a variety of awards throughout your time in government service, and you are probably, I would imagine, one of the world experts on weapons of mass destruction. Did I hit everything there, you think?
Yes, I think you pretty much covered it. My background covers all weapons of mass destruction, got a certificate in nuclear weapons design, and of all these threats, I'm familiar with all of them. The one I'm most concerned with, the one we're here to talk about today, is electromagnetic pulse, which is one of the least known weapons of mass destruction threats, and yet is the greatest.
Right. I remember the last time we spoke, you said that you tried to think of all of the threats that humans face, and this is the one that would most likely bring civilization to its knees.
That's right, because with a single nuclear weapon detonated at high altitude over the United States, it would collapse the electric grid, all of the critical infrastructures, transportation, communications, banking and finance, and food and water, everything that makes us a modern society and that enables us to sustain 300 million American lives with just one nuclear weapon. And the Iranians know that, the Chinese know it, the Russians know it, the North Koreans know it, all the bad guys know it, except the American people, a lot of them still don't know it, even though we've had two congressional commissions and have done numerous official studies. And we're even hearing Congress is convening another hearing this Wednesday to try to get the word out about how serious a threat this is.
Why don't you tell the listeners about that, what's happening this Wednesday, and your part in it?
The Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, Representative Trent Franks from the House Armed Services Committee, and a former science advisor on the Homeland Security Committee all will be testifying and saying basically the same thing, that a nuclear EMP threat can do what I just said. And this is why terrorists in Iran want the bomb. They don't need a lot of bombs. They just need one bomb. We've seen Iran write about attacking the United States with a nuclear EMP attack, and we've seen them practice with missiles. They don't even need an ICBM. We've seen them practice launching missiles off a vessel at sea so they could get a tramp steamer and sail it up close to our shores and launch a short-range or medium-range missile like a Scud or their Shahab 3 medium-range missile and take us down. And in fact, that's what the commission thinks Iran wants to do with the bomb when they get it. The other threat you're going to hear about at the hearing is the natural EMP threat, because the sun can pose a threat too by means of a great geomagnetic storm. These happen once every 100 years. The last was the Carrington event in 1859. That's before we became a modern civilization dependent upon electric grids and the critical infrastructures that make modern society possible, back in the horse and buggy days. So it didn't have catastrophic consequences, the Carrington event in 1859, although it caused fires and telegraph stations and forest fires because it caused telegraph lines to burst into flame and destroy the transatlantic cable. And if something like that happened today, it would be as devastating, maybe more devastating than a nuclear EMP attack. In fact, a Carrington-class geomagnetic storm would take down electric grids not just in the United States, but worldwide. And basically, given our current state of unpreparedness as a civilization, possibly end civilization as we know it. There's no excuse for any nation, especially the United States, to be vulnerable to this threat. And part of the hearing today is to try to break loose the solution that we've been trying to get through Congress for years now. One of the things the EMP Commission recommended back in 2008, when it was terminated, when it finally went out of business, it said we need to protect the electric grid. We know how to do it. It doesn't cost a lot of money, but we do need to add certain new legal authorities to the government so that they can basically require the electric power industry, which is the private sector, to do what's necessary to protect the grid and to come up with financial mechanisms so that they don't have to bear all the costs, so the cost can be fairly and equitably shared. And for that, we need to pass a bill. And the bill that's been pending in one version or another for several years now is called the SHIELD Act, H.R. 668. And we're running out of time in this Congress to get that bill passed. past. We've tried year after year, almost every year since the EMP Commission went out of business. One time we almost got it through. It did pass the House when it was called the Grid Act, and the Democrats controlled the House. And only one senator stopped it from coming to a vote. So we're basically engaged in a Hail Mary operation to try to get this bill through. And the problem is the electric power industry doesn't want it to pass because they don't want any kind of new authorities or regulation over the electric power industry. Their lawyers just don't want that to happen.
Right.
When I talk to engineers, electrical engineers, they tend to be all for it because they understand it. Unfortunately, the electrical engineers are not running the electric power industry. Like most big industries, it's run by the lawyers. It's run by this thing called the NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, which it's supposed to be a partner with the government to protect the grid. But in fact, it's just a great big lobby that sees its job as doing things like stopping the SHIELD Act. Shall we say they have undue influence over certain members of Congress?
Yeah.
And in this case, the chairman of a particular committee has been holding up that bill. The guy's name is Fred Upton, and he's the chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Is it permissible for me to give out a phone number on your show?
Absolutely.
If your audience, and I would urge everyone to do it, wants to play a role in saving your country from an EMP catastrophe that could be caused by the sun, that could be caused by terrorists or Iran, I'd ask you to call this number, 202-225-3761, 202-225-3761. That'll connect you to Congressman Upton's office. Perhaps your audience would be willing to give them a piece of their mind about what they think. Maybe I shouldn't encourage people to be impolite.
It's part of the democratic process.
Yeah, I would ask you to ask them to bring that bill up for a vote. There's an old saying about lead, follow, or get out of the way.
Right.
And it's about time that happened. Let the bill come up for a vote. Maybe even Mr. Upton, who's a Republican, and Republicans are supposed to be, I'm a Republican too, and we're supposed to be strongest on national security issues. This is the greatest national security issue we face. The greatest national security issue we face. There's no excuse for letting our country remain vulnerable to this threat. Iran's almost got the bomb. We're only months away from the beginning of this new solar maximum, which begins in December. It's just a few months away, December 2012, and it'll last all through 2013. I explained last time I was on the show that during the solar maximum, you have increased incidence of solar flares and coronal mass ejections, and a lot of scientists are concerned that we could get hit by another great geomagnetic storm during the solar maximum because we're overdue for another great geomagnetic storm. The last one was 1859. They happen every 100 years. You can do the arithmetic. We're decades overdue for one, and now we face a solar maximum.
Right. And I just want to say that in this interview, we're talking about some stuff we talked about before, and you'll find right there on the page that you're accessing the interview from that there are links to the other interviews so you can get more up to date on electromagnetic pulse and the Harrington event and the other things we're discussing because we discussed them at length. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Right, and basically what this hearing is supposed to accomplish, one of the things it's supposed to accomplish is you've got the Committee on Homeland Security holding this hearing so that it can provide a stage for the Department of Homeland Security to come over and tell basically Mr. Upton that this is a threat in the view of the Department of Homeland Security and we've got to act against it. That's what the Department of Defense is going to say. That's what Representative Trent Franks is going to say. It's his bill that's been held up all this time. And the Democrat witness, Chris Beck, was the science advisor to that committee. They're all going to say the same thing because there's a consensus in official Washington about how serious this threat is. There's no excuse for not doing anything anymore. Like I said, this is a Hail Mary effort by us to try to jam this bill through a process so that maybe we can start making progress. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, these are good guys. This is the FERC, not the NERC. They have been standing by for a couple of years, like a coiled spring, just waiting for this bill to pass, waiting for the SHIELD Act to pass so they can get to work with industry protecting the electric grid. It can't happen legally until the bill is passed. So that's why I'm actually here today, to make an appeal to your audience to help us, help your country, help your own families, and make that phone call to try to make this simple thing happen. It really is enormously frustrating, as you can imagine, that we've had all these congressional commissions and all these scientists and all this work. I remember back in 2008 when we had finished the work of the EMP Commission, everybody was pretty happy about it then because we knew that the solar maximum was still many years off and we had time. We had time back then to get the grid protected. The commission estimated that it would have taken, moving at a leisurely pace, 3 to 5 years to get the grid protected. We can accomplish a lot in a short period of time on an emergency basis. But look at how the years have slipped by. So now we're only, who knows, months away probably from a nuclear Iran. Iran might already have the bomb. And and certainly we're months away from the solar maximum. I don't want to be too alarmist here. Nobody knows when the next Carrington Event class geomagnetic storm will happen.
Right.
It may not happen. We might get lucky, and there may be no great geomagnetic storm that happens during this coming solar maximum. I pray that turns out to be the case. But every year that passes, the odds get worse and worse against us. Such an event is inevitable. Someday there will be, either in our lifetime or in our children's lifetimes, there will be a Carrington-class geomagnetic storm. And right now, we are so unprepared for it. The Commission estimated that if a nuclear or natural EMP event happened today, given our current state of unpreparedness, that within a year, we would lose two-thirds of our population to starvation, disease, societal collapse. That's basically a high-tech way of killing people the old-fashioned way. And that's why this is so urgent. The electric grid and these modern critical infrastructures are to our society what the aqueducts were to the Romans. The Roman Empire couldn't survive without the aqueduct system. One of the things the barbarians did to cause the Dark Ages is they destroyed the aqueducts. Let us not let the new barbarians, or an accident of nature, destroy our modern aqueducts, our modern equivalent of that, which is our electric grid and the other critical infrastructures that sustain modern society and all of our lives.
You never brought that up before, the comparison with the aqueduct. That's amazing. That's 100% accurate.
To give a statistic, Rome, during the height of the empire, had a population of about 1 million people. And then when it fell in 476, I think in the century after that, Visigoths destroyed the aqueducts that serviced Rome. And the population of Rome dropped to 10,000 people. It went from 1 million people to 10,000 people. It's an exact metaphor.
Wow, that's huge. I didn't know that. Yeah, and again, for the listeners to get up to speed here with what we're talking about, access those links that are contained in this interview on the webpage that you accessed it from, and you will get up to date on really how easy it is to plunge the United States back into the, well, I'm not going to say dark ages, but obviously prior to electricity, when, of course, the Carrington event hit. We just had the 153rd anniversary of it, I think it was, from August 28th till September 2nd. The only thing, as we said before, that was around as far as technological advances were the telegraph systems and the transatlantic cable, which you said was just laid, and the great geomagnetic storm, the Carrington event, that big solar flare, that big coronal mass ejection, actually penetrated through the ocean to the transatlantic cable and fried it, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
That's why I had to lay it all over again. And actually, to say the Dark Ages, that would be accurate. Fritz Ehrmarth, who was the chairman of the National Intelligence Council, that's the group within the intelligence community that wrote the national intelligence estimates.
Okay.
He was probably the best chairman of the NIC we ever had. And he was a farsighted man of vision, very intelligent guy, who managed to get us through the Cold War without it turning into a nuclear war, because he was such a good intelligence officer. He was one of the handful of people who, in effect, thought us through the Cold War. Him, guys like Jim Woolsey and Bill Graham, Freddie Clay, a handful of defense scientists and defense intellectuals who managed to achieve that victory, who often don't get enough credit for it.
Right.
But he actually was critical of the EMP Commission because he said we underestimated the casualties and underestimated how bad it would be by saying that it would be like sending the country back to the 19th century. Fritz Ehrmarth would agree with you and say, no, it wouldn't be the 19th century. It would be sending us back to the Dark Ages. And Fritz's argument for that was that if you looked at the way we calculated, how did we get 200 million dead from a year after an EMP catastrophe? Well, we said, what was the population? What was the natural carrying capability of the land before we had modern technology, before we developed the modern electric grids and all the technology that enables our modern food system, a population of farmers that's less than 2% of our population, we get to feed the other 98%.
Right.
So we said, well, what was the population in 1900, before there were all these modern critical infrastructures and a modern electric grid? And in 1900, we had a population of 100 million people. So we thought, well, that looked like we could probably sustain a population of 100 million people after an EMP catastrophe. But Fritz Ehrmarth makes a very good argument. He says those 100 million people that were living around 1890 to 1900, 75% of them were farmers, and all of them were only a generation removed from the pioneer stock. They were all basically survivalists. Everybody, every American had a gun. They all knew how to hunt and fish. They all knew something about farming. That's why we were able to sustain a population of 100 million people back in those days.
Right.
100 million people that would survive if an EMP attack happened today, or if a great geomagnetic storm happens in the near future, in 2012 or 2013. 100 million people that would be around after a year would be mostly people who are not farmers or fishermen or pioneer stock. They would be people who have urban backgrounds and suburban and backgrounds and don't have those characteristics that most Americans actually did have up until just a generation ago. I think maybe last time I talked about the Great Generation, my father's generation that lived through the Great Depression and World War II. They still had those pioneering survival skills. Most Americans did. They knew how to hunt fish. They lived through the Great Depression. I remember my father fed his family by hunting Hoover hogs. So your characterization of it being the Dark Ages, Fritz thought we would probably lose, instead of two-thirds of the population, his estimate was that it would be more on the order of 90%, you know, because it would be boiled down to that small fraction of our population that basically knows all about farming and has the survival characteristics that the pioneer stock had.
Right. What's significant about this hearing this week?
In a sense, it's going to be an historic hearing because the Department of Homeland Security, up until this point, hasn't been willing to basically say and acknowledge what has been well established by several congressional commissions and all the official studies. For reasons that are hard to understand, the Department of Homeland Security has actually been one of the biggest impediments to making progress on getting the country protected because they have been unwilling to talk about EMP as an existential threat, as a highly credible threat that is likely to happen. And moreover, very importantly, they've refused to take responsibility for protecting the critical infrastructures against this threat. I have personally met, back in 2009, I personally met with leaders at the Department of Homeland Security, and their attitude was, well, if it involves a nuclear weapon, it's a Department of Defense problem, not our problem. Even though the EMP attack would involve attacking civilian critical infrastructures, which is under DHS jurisdiction, it's not under DOD's jurisdiction.
Right.
And DOD, if you go to DOD, their position has been, and their position is correct, they don't have jurisdiction over those critical infrastructures, so there's really nothing they can do. But they will also add to that, but the EMP could come from a geomagnetic storm, and that kind of natural catastrophe clearly falls within the jurisdiction of the Department of Homeland Security. And the position of industry has been, it's not industry's job to protect the American people from foreign threats or natural catastrophes. That's the job of the government. And until some part of the government takes responsibility, takes the lead on this, and is willing to work with industry to make it happen, protect the grid, and come up with reasonable financial mechanisms to pay for it, because industry shouldn't be stuck holding the bag on this, because it is a national security issue. You have this three-way logjam that has held things up to this point. But now, you have this, in effect, historic development where all the ducks are all lined up. DHS is going to acknowledge publicly and officially that, yes, these are clear and present dangers, and DHS is responsible for protecting the grid from these dangers. So that's a historic development. DOD is not really going to take a new position. They've acknowledged that these are serious threats all along. But the fact that you've got both of the agencies, both of the departments that have responsibility, all responsibility for this, whether it's a foreign threat or whether it's a natural disaster, coming out and publicly saying that, we're hoping that that will make an impression on Mr. Upton so that he will finally act. You could hide, perhaps, behind the excuse that, well, DHS wasn't sure whether it had responsibility for this and some of the ambiguity that was around because of the position that DHS was taking. And DHS, I would add, part of the reason I believe DHS was behaving itself so irresponsibly on this is because the electric power industry has a lot of influence on them. DHS relies for its technical information on the Department of Energy. And if you look at the backgrounds of people who work in the DOE on these issues, there's a rotating door between the Department of Energy officials and the electric power industry. So it was kind of predictable there. Just another case that Washington not working very well on this issue, it hasn't been working at all. Finally, I think, achieved a breakthrough here and an opportunity to get the country protected. I don't think we could move fast enough that we'll be able to beat the solar maximum. But there are things that could be done in a few months' time, certainly around some of our major population areas where the most important big transformers are located, for example. You know, to get those things protected, every increment of protection that we do at this time, by even making small investments, you can end up potentially saving a lot of lives. It hasn't happened yet. We haven't been hit with a nuclear EMP attack yet, and a Carrington-class storm hasn't happened yet, so it's not too late.
Right, and I just wanted to make the point that the possibility of another Carrington happening is 100%, right?
Yes, that's inevitable. It's going to happen sometime for sure. As you noted, it happened in 1859, so the second Carrington event should have happened already sometime between 1859 and 1959.
Right.
But here we are in 2012, and we still haven't had another Carrington yet. And we know that these things happen every century or so because we can actually see coronal mass ejections that could cause another Carrington. It's just that we've been lucky, and our satellites that we've deployed to observe the sun over the last decade have seen a number of coronal mass ejections that could have caused a Carrington if if they hit the Earth. The only reason we haven't had another Carrington event yet is like we're playing this Russian roulette game with the sun that keeps putting out these big coronal mass ejections, and fortunately, they haven't come in our direction yet.
Right, just glancing blows, right?
Yeah, glancing blows. One of these days, though, one of those things is going to hit us dead on, and we will have another Carrington.
Right. Are there satellites deployed that are trying to detect another Carrington?
There's only one satellite we have. It's called the ACE satellite. It was put up a long time ago, and it's nearing the end of its useful service life. It wouldn't give us much warning. From other satellites and from observatories, we can see coronal mass ejections when they leave the sun, and we can kind of guesstimate whether they're coming in our direction, or there were one or two where we were afraid they were going to be a Carrington, but fortunately they just missed us or hit us a glancing blow. Now this ACE satellite is our best instrument, despite the fact that it's so old, for telling us pretty much for sure whether it's going to be a Carrington or not, but it'll only give us about 20 to 30 minutes warning. That the CME has to get that close. Usually we can see a CME come in our way for about 2 or 3 days. They travel about 1 million miles an hour. We're 97 million miles away from the sun, so we've got that many hours before one hits us. But it's only in the last 20 or 30 minutes that we know for sure, which is why what the electric power industry wants to do, they've been arguing that they can engage in what they call operational procedures. In other words, they can power down the grid so that there's not that much energy flowing through it, or shift loads around in some ingenious fashion to make themselves more survivable. But that's just all nonsense, and it's just an excuse to avoid biting the bullet and putting in the protections, the actual protective devices, like blocking devices and surge arresters and Faraday cages. These things are not that expensive. They're going to cost a little bit of money, but they're not that expensive. Industry basically wants to spend no money at all, and these operational procedures will not work. And we know they won't work because they don't even work when it comes to blizzards and ice storms and the derecho that swept through Washington recently.
Right.
Operational procedures were so great. How come they can't avoid a week-long blackout in Washington, D.C. when we have a derecho come through?
Exactly. You know what's laughable? Think about how much money and time they spent when the Federal Reserve was worried about that one digit change that would shut down all the computers, right? That whole Y2K scare. They spent billions and billions, and I'm sure it came from the taxpayers, because these bankers always pass the buck to the taxpayers in one way or another. And here we're talking about a tiny amount of what was spent on Y2K, and nobody's doing anything.
Yeah. For $2 billion, which is what we spend on foreign military aid, not all foreign aid, just the military aid to Pakistan, which country is basically our enemy. I mean,
right.
That's the reality.
Right.
We give those guys $2 billion a year, and for that, we could provide very robust protection of the electric grid and make this problem go away. For a minimum, we spend the $100 to $200 million, that's million with an M, dollars that would be necessary to protect the big transformers that service the major metropolitan areas. That wouldn't solve the whole problem, but it would at least give us some kind of a chance to save those 200 million American lives that will perish otherwise. That's only 50 cents to a dollar a life. And literally, we spend more than that sending condoms to Africa.
That's amazing. So the hearing is this Wednesday, September 12th at 10 a.m. It's the House Committee on Homeland Security, going to be in the Cannon Room. That's room 311. It's going to be the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, and Representative Franks is going to testify on behalf of the SHIELD Act. Do you know if it's going to be televised or webcast?
It will be webcast, yes.
Okay, great. And you are going to testify not that day, but you're going to give a briefing to the congressional staff the day before the hearing on September 11th.
Right.
Is that right?
Tomorrow I'll be pre-briefing the congressional staff because a lot of them still don't have background on this and how important it is. Again, I would beg your audience, stand up, be counted, stand up for your country, call 202-225-3761, 202-225-3761, and let Fred Upton know that you think he should bring that bill up for a vote, bring the SHIELD Act up for a vote. And I would also like to add that if you want to become an expert on these matters, I do have a book that's out on Amazon.com. It's under my name, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, called Civil Military Preparedness for an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe. And perhaps you could give them my email address. I'm glad to email anybody who wants a copy of it. I could email them a copy if they're interested in doing it that way.
Sure. It's Peter Pry, P-E-T-E-R-P-R-Y, at Verizon.net.
That's right, because the Kindle version that's available through Amazon.com is a Kindle book, but you can't print those out, and people might want to print out and have a hard copy of the book.
Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, thanks again for your expertise and all of the knowledge that you bring to the table here for this very, very least understood threat of all of the weapons of mass destruction, the electromagnetic pulse, and best of luck in the pre-hearing, and I hope that the hearing on Wednesday goes in your favor. Hope to talk to you after the hearing on Wednesday.
Thank you so much, Dave. And you and your listeners are, and especially all of them who are willing to get educated on this topic and participate and be proactive by calling in that number to try to make the SHIELD Act pass, you and they are the Minutemen of the modern age. This is the new battlefield for freedom. It's fought on the policy level, and it's what keeps democracies alive and vibrant. So this show of yours, who knows, it could be the decisive thing that ends up putting the SHIELD Act over the top. If it puts the SHIELD Act over the top, we might have saved 2/3 of the American population this afternoon.
You're absolutely right. Thanks again, Dr. Pry.
Thank you so much, Dave. Greatly appreciate it.